friends. Even if he's bluffing, it's too big a risk to take. Eliminating him won't be easy. He's a trained fighter, and he's tough. He's coming here to Selene on an HSS vessel, isn't he? Humphreys pointed out. The crew can get rid of him. Fairford sighed like a schoolteacher facing a boy who hadn't done his homework. Then you'd have half a dozen people who'd have something on you. Besides, I don't think the entire crew could take him. As I said, he's trained, and he's tough. Things could get quite messy if we try to take him out. Then what do you recommend? He asked sullenly. Let me deal with him. Personally. You? She nodded. Keep Grigor out of this. Harbin is most likely worried that we want to take him out, especially since he failed with Fuchs and he knows enough to hang us all. Let me show him that it's not that way. I'll offer him a bonus, send him back to Earth with a fat bank account.
So he can blackmail me for the rest of his life?
Yes, of course, that's exactly what he'll think. And we'll let him go on thinking that until he's living it up on Earth and his guard is down. A crooked smile slowly curled across Humphreys' lips.
Delilah, he murmured.
Fairford saw that he was satisfied with her plan. She took a long swallow of the licorice-flavored Pernod, then agreed. Delilah. Humphreys' smile turned sardonic.
Are you going to fuck him, too?
She made herself smile back. If I have to. But she was thinking, you don't know whose hair is going to get trimmed, Martin. And there's more than one way to screw a man. Even you.
Fuchs had dreaded this moment. He knew it had to come, though. There was no way around it. The IAA official was due to arrive at Ceres in another few hours. He started packing his travel bag for the trip to Selene. When Amanda took her bag from the closet and laid it on the bed beside his, he told her that he was going without her.
What do you mean?
Amanda asked, obviously startled by his decision. Precisely what I said. George, Noden, and I are going. I want you to remain here. She looked puzzled, hurt.
But Lars, I...
You are not going with me, Fuchs said sharply. Shocked at his vehemence, Amanda stared at him open-mouthed, as if he had slapped her in the face. That's final, he snapped.
But Lars...
No buts and no arguments, he said. You stay here and run what's left of the business while I'm in Selene.
Lars, you can't go without me. I won't let you.
He tried to stare her down. This was the hardest part, he realized. I've got to hurt her. There's no other way to do this. Amanda, he said, trying to sound stern, trying to keep his own doubts and pain out of his voice, out of his face. I have made up my mind. I need you to remain here. I'm not a little boy who must bring his mother with him wherever he goes.
Your mother?
Whatever, he said. I'm going without you.
But why?
Because that's what I want, he said, raising his voice. I know that you think I'd be safer if you were with me. That Humphreys won't attack me if he believes you might be hurt too. Poppycock! I don't need your protection. I don't want it. She burst into tears and fled to the lavatory, leaving him standing by the bed in agony. If he's going to kill me, it won't matter to him whether Amanda's with me or not. The closer I get to hurting him, the more desperate he becomes. She'll be safer here, among friends, among people who know her. He wants to kill me, not her. I'll face him without her. It will be better that way. He was certain he was right. If only he couldn't hear her sobbing on the other side of the thin door.
Hector Wilcox felt extremely uneasy about going to the moon. His flight from the spaceport at Munich had been terrifying, despite all the reassurances of the Astral Corporation employees. Their stout little clipper ship looked sturdy enough when he boarded it. The flight attendant who showed him to his seat went on at length about the ship's diamond structure hull and the reliability records that Clipper ships had run up. All well and good, Wilcox thought. He strapped himself firmly into his seat, and fortified by several whiskies beforehand, and a medicinal patch plastered on the inside of his elbow to ward against space sickness, he gripped the seat's armrests and listened with growing apprehension to the countdown. Takeoff terrified him. It was like an explosion that jolted every bone in his body. He felt squashed down in his seat. Then before he could utter a word of complaint, he was weightless, floating against the straps of his safety harness, his stomach rising up into his throat, despite his medicine patch. Swallowing bile, he reached for the wretch bags tucked into the pouch on the seat back in front of him. By the time the Clipper ship had docked with the space station, Wilcox was wishing that he'd insisted on holding the damnable hearing on Earth. There were plenty of smiling, uniformed astro personnel to help him out of the Clipper ship and into the transfer vehicle that would go the rest of the way to the moon. Groaning in zero gravity, Wilcox allowed them to haul him around like a helpless invalid and tuck him into a seat on the transfer ship that was far less comfortable than the Clipper ships had been. At least there was some feeling of gravity when the transfer vehicle started its high thrust burn, moonward. But that dwindled away all too soon, and for the next several hours, Wilcox wondered if he was going to survive this journey. Gradually, though, he began to feel better. His stomach didn't feel so queasy. The pressure behind his eyes eased off. If he didn't turn his head or make any sudden moves, zero gravity was almost pleasurable. Once they landed at Selene's Armstrong spaceport, the light lunar gravity gave Wilcox a renewed sense of up and down. He was able to unstrap and get out of his chair without help. He stumbled first, but by the time he had been checked through customs and rented a pair of weighted boots, he felt almost normal. The soothing elegance of the Hotel Luna's lobby helped Wilcox to feel even more at home. Quiet luxury always pleased him, and although the lobby was slightly tatty here and there, the general tone and atmosphere of the place was reassuring. The local IAA flunkies had taken the best suite in Selene's only hotel for him. Spare no expense, Wilcox thought, as he looked around the sumptuous sitting room, so long as it's coming out of the taxpayer's pocket and not mine. An assistant manager brought him to the suite, unpacked his bags for him, and even politely refused the tip Wilcox proffered. The hotel staff had prepared everything for him, including a well-stocked bar. One good jolt of whiskey, and Wilcox felt almost normal again. There was a tap on the door, and before Wilcox could say a word, the door slid open, and a liveried servant pushed in a rolling table laden with covered dishes and a half dozen bottles of wine. Surprised, Wilcox began to protest. "I didn't order." Then Martin Humphreys walked into the suite, all smiles. "I thought you'd appreciate a good meal, Hector," said Humphreys. "This is from my own kitchen, not the regular hotel fare." Gesturing toward the bottles, he added, "From my own cellar, too." Wilcox broke into a genuinely pleased smile. "Why, Martin, for goodness sake, how kind of you." As the waiter silently set out their dinner, Humphreys explained, "We shouldn't be seen in a public restaurant together, and I couldn't invite you down to my home without it seeming improper." "Quite so," Wilcox agreed. "Too many damnable snoops willing to believe the worst about anyone. So I decided to bring dinner to you. I hope you don't mind." "Not at all. I'm delighted to see you again. How long has it been?" "I've been living here in Selene for more than 6 years now." "Has it been that long?" Wilcox brushed his mustache with a fingertip. "But, aren't we running the risk of seeming impropriety? After all, with the hearing coming up..." "No risk at all," Humphrey said smoothly. "This man is a local employee of mine, and the hotel people can be relied on to be discreet."
"I see. You can't be too careful these days, especially a man in such a high position of trust as you are."
"Rather," said Wilcox, smiling as he watched the waiter open the first bottle of wine.
Doric Harbin looked around the spare one-room apartment.
Good enough, he thought.